Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Emily Shears, Vice President for Quality, Northern Pennsylvania and New York, UPMC Hammett. Emily, it's great to have you back on another episode of Business Spotlight. Thank you for joining us. Let's jump right into it. The Delta variant was our biggest concern for several months. Today, it's the Omicron variant. Can you share details about the COVID variants that you are seeing currently at UPMC Hammett?
So we base our data on variants on the state and national surveillance. So we don't do any subtyping or variant testing here with the specimens that we collect, but the state of Pennsylvania does sample those. So we track the CDC data. They have a variant tracker. And so we know that when we start to see the samples increase in the percent in our area, that we're seeing a particular variant. So we're very confident we're seeing Omicron in the state of Pennsylvania. I believe it's over 99% of the samples they are testing in the past, really in the past month, have been Omicron. So that's when we see kind of the shift from variants is based on the sampling that they take throughout the population.
There's been a lot of discussion so far that the Omicron variant has not been as severe as the Delta variant. What are your thoughts on that, and what have you been seeing?
You know, I think it's hard to really prescribe if one variant is maybe more severe or quote unquote deadly, because it's really all about the patient that it infects and really what their comorbidities are. And I know we'll talk about that in a little bit. But so I would say that, again, COVID and coronaviruses in general have long been what we would say is the common cold. And so for the vast majority of people, it is a mild illness. We know that, again, with vaccines, that that also prevents severe illness. So I think it's hard to say or hard to really prove at this point if it's technically more mild. I do think because it was very widespread that we did have a lot of that high percent kind of stating it was mild disease in our area.
Emily, I want to get your thoughts on a new Omicron subvariant known as BA2 that is apparently primarily circulating in Europe. It's 1.5 times more transmissible than the original Omicron strain, according to Danish scientists. Will this Omicron subvariant be our next worry in the U.S.?
Yeah, I think with our technology, obviously during this pandemic, we're very well informed of what variants and subtyping and things that are circulating. I think time will tell in terms of whether a variant in particular coming from any particular part of the world or region will become a significant player in terms of global pandemic or even here in the United States. Throughout the past couple years, we've had different variants of concern or interest, which, again, you know, some have, such as Delta and Omicron, affected us. But there were others, if you recall, out of other, you know, parts of South America, Brazil, that had variants that were discussed. So, again, I think it's going to be a waiting game to see how quickly certain variants will spread and whether they will kind of find a niche in the United States or not.
There was a report last week that a Midwest doctor stated that tests aren't detecting new COVID variants. How big of a concern is this, and is it factual from what you've seen?
So we have always used a PCR test, which really looks for the genetic material from a virus. And I don't know if he was stating about an antigen test, which is different. It looks for basically molecules on the surface of the virus. So the antigen tests, while they are now widespread and lots of Americans have them in their homes, which is really great for access, they don't have as high of sensitivity. And sensitivity basically means if someone truly has disease, does the test detect it at what percent of the time? So if you have 10 people that actually do have COVID, antigen tests are very wide ranging, anywhere from 35 to, you know, 85, 90% sensitive to picking up that true disease. So I do think that at certain points, absolutely, someone may have true COVID disease and the test may come back negative. Now, whether that is specific to a variant or not, I think it's a little too early to tell. And again, with the large number of tests available out there, I think in a sense it's a little out of our control to know the data on every single brand.
Emily, we had an opportunity back in December to speak with David Gibbons, the president of UPMC Hammett, on our year in review program. And we discussed the impact that COVID has had on the healthcare team at UPMC Hammett. What are your thoughts on that same topic from your perspective?
Well, it's been a stressful time. I think healthcare has had to transform. We no longer think we would be going back to anything normal. This is really the new way of dealing with disease in our community while having to provide all the other care. So I think it's been a long road. Obviously, a lot of individuals in healthcare across the United States have chosen to leave healthcare, which makes it a much more stressful environment for those that have remained in that career path. We've seen a lot of early retirement. So it's definitely, we can't say it's been without stress and without strain, but I think we have a resilient staff, and that's what makes it worth coming to work every day.
And despite those trials and tribulations, the team at UPMC Hammett has been extremely resilient. I would imagine you agree with that and you're proud of that resiliency.
Absolutely. I think our staff, like I said, you know, resilience is a really good word to use through kind of such a trying couple years. But I think everyone's a family here and people are willing to step up and support each other and they really care about each other. And that's what makes, you know, working at Hammett a great environment for everyone. So we will continue to do what we need to do because everyone takes pride in providing the care for our community.
Emily, we're going to put you on the spot and ask you, what are you most proud of when it comes to working with the best healthcare professionals in Erie, the fantastic team at UPMC Hammett, after almost 2 years of treating COVID patients?
Yeah, I think it's just that everyone understands that no matter what, we still need to provide good patient care and high quality care. And so while the environment is stressful, people are still here and they're still doing those things and they're still caring and loving. And we've had lots and numerous stories of just amazing compassion and, you know, stories that we're still making this hospital stay or we're making certain moments special for patients. And so that's what gets people through the day, gets people through the weeks when it's hard and stressful. So I'm proud that we've maintained our, what we call Hammett Strong environment where we support each other.
Do you believe we will continue to see even more booster shots as variants evolve?
You know, I haven't had a very recent update on booster shots, but absolutely. I think this is going to be an evolving vaccine, much similar as we've discussed. It's easy to compare it to influenza, where we kind of monitor different strains that are circulating in different parts of the world at different times. And then we produce our flu vaccines, usually including three or four different strains that we predict or we hope, in a sense, will be effective against those strains that would potentially come to our area. So I would assume it's going to be a similar approach in terms of boosters and vaccines in general. Will we have vaccines that cover multiple strains, or will they find essentially another way to disable the components of the virus so that the variant may not be as, you know, different variants may not be as effective if it can disable the whole? So I think it's going to be an evolving arena in terms of the vaccine production.
There's discussions right now about the production of specific boosters for Omicron in the Omicron subvariants. If this comes to fruition, Emily, are you concerned about booster fatigue amongst the public?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a consideration. I think even in the United States, we're seeing some shot fatigue in terms of, you know, mask fatigue. Now it's shot fatigue, where we're not seeing as many individuals get the booster as maybe did get the initial series of shots. And so, you know, I think it's going to be hard to convince people every time a variant comes out to get a new shot. So I think they're going to have to try to figure out how to modify boosters and vaccines to be most effective for the most individuals. If it can last 9 to 12 months, then that could become maybe integrated with something like an influenza shot or some other type of routine vaccine. But what we've also seen too is that the variants change very quickly. So we could have vaccinated for Omicron or still be doing that now, and the variant has really come and gone very quickly, more than maybe Delta or some other the initial variants at the beginning. So it's going to be hard not to try to play chase in terms of vaccine production. So I think they're going to have to be thoughtful about how they produce maybe a more proactive vaccine.
Can herd immunity ever be realized if more people do not get the vaccine?
Well, it's not solely, herd immunity is not really solely dependent on just vaccines. Obviously, natural immunity plays into herd immunity as well. And we know that different individuals respond to vaccine and natural infection differently, meaning they may, one individual may have immunity for much longer than another. And so I think herd immunity, we have shown, can be difficult to obtain. And I don't know if it's a magic number. I'm not sure that coronavirus has really allowed us the opportunity based on the number of variants that keep kind of coming our way. And we obviously are seeing that if you've had coronavirus once, even if you're vaccinated, there is a potential that you could have it again. So I don't know if we will really ever realize that for one particular variant, especially if new variants can reinfect people within a fairly short amount of time.
Emily, what would your message be to those who remain unvaccinated?
Well, I would always encourage people to talk with their healthcare professional and just, to discuss those questions, concerns, barriers, but also discuss risk factors. So what is the individual's risk factor for severe disease? Again, the majority of young, healthy people do tend to have a mild, maybe a moderate presentation, but there are obviously outliers to that. So what are your individual risk factors, and would vaccination really be a life-saving measure for someone? So again, talk to their healthcare professionals about their specific healthcare needs and concerns.
Emily, there is a term that scientists have dubbed long COVID. They describe that as a range of symptoms that can run on for weeks or even months after a patient is first infected. Why does COVID make some much more sick than others?
Well, it's definitely clear that people that have particular risk factors, which I know we'll get into, but high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, smoking, certain chronic conditions can be more likely to have a serious bout of COVID. But they're really not finding a clear link between the risk factors and long-term problems. So I think we're going to need more studies overall to shed light on why individuals may be having more organ damage or persistent inflammatory responses versus others. So I think it's still an unknown. I think this is going to be something that is a little more studied as we move forward.
Have the healthcare professionals at UPMC Hammett treated those with lasting effects from COVID-19, and what are they treating?
I'm sure across our network of physicians that we're having patients that would continue to have, lingering effects of COVID. We've heard of anecdotal reports of that where it's hindering daily activities. I think it would be similar to really what the CDC is reporting out. The most common lasting symptoms do seem to be fatigue, continued shortness of breath. Cough can linger, obviously, post-viral cough can linger for a month or two. Joint pain, chest pain. We've also been hearing reports, not necessarily locally, but nationally about cognitive. So people having kind of difficulty concentrating, some depression, headaches, intermittent fevers, can last for a few weeks. So it's really across the board. And again, I think it needs to be more studied in terms of maybe who or why certain individuals are at risk for longer duration of symptoms.
Any other risk factors associated with severe COVID-19 that we haven't discussed, or possibly some things that your team has seen that maybe hasn't been talked about?
Well, they really, in a sense, haven't changed from the beginning, where, at the beginning, we knew the older aged individuals were at increased risk. Obviously, anyone of any age that has any serious health problems, so heart and lung conditions, weakened immune systems, obesity, diabetes, I already mentioned. Some other things, Down syndrome is actually now added to a list, chronic liver and kidney disease, brain and nervous system, obviously cancer and certain blood disorders. So it's really chronic illness as a whole, I would say, that tends to have more severe COVID. And that's also true for other viral respiratory illnesses like influenza as well. So I guess it's not out of the ballpark for a respiratory virus to kind of target that population a little harder.
We're talking with Emily Shears, Vice President for Quality, Northern Pennsylvania and New York for UPMC. Emily, what are the major cardiac complications in patients with COVID-19?
Well, the research here is showing that COVID can damage the heart muscle, and so therefore it's affecting the heart function. And they think it's because really when you have a respiratory virus, the levels of inflammation circulating in the body can be higher. And so our immune system tries to fight off the virus, and it can cause some damage to our healthy tissues too. So the heart is not excluded from that. We're also seeing a little bit of research coming out about coronavirus affecting the inner surface of veins and arteries, which can obviously, if you're having, blood vessel inflammation, cause blood clots, which we've heard about as an outcome of COVID as well. And then, obviously, severe COVID can cause even more damage. So patients that end up in critical care, we tend to see some more of those cardiac or even clotting disorders.
I'm curious to hear your response to this question, Emily. What advice should be given to patients with known or presumed COVID-19 infections that are trying to manage it at home?
Yeah, I mean, if you live by yourself, obviously make sure people know that you're home and that you're having someone regularly check on you. We always encourage people, if you know you're sick, to make sure you have a supply of medications on hand. Again, that you have, food and supplies and things like that. Again, most people will have mild to moderate illness, but make sure someone's always checking in on you. And then again, if someone presumes they have it, please get tested. Testing is a helpful way. Again, that PCR test continues to be the gold standard. Testing volumes in our area right now have gone down, so there's not a long wait. We're seeing a turnaround fairly quickly, about a day and a half for results or sooner. And so once you get that diagnosis, then follow public health guidance. Make sure your PCP is aware and can answer any of the questions that you might have. And then obviously isolating at home until your symptoms have resolved.
We discussed earlier in the program the unvaccinated population. Let's talk about vaccinated people now, and can they get infected with the Omicron variant?
Yes, so I think this is a widespread myth, is that once people got vaccinated or even had previous illness, they thought, I'm totally safe. This cold I have could never possibly be COVID because I've been vaccinated. Delta and Omicron, we saw what we call breakthrough cases, meaning that an individual may have some level of immunity detected, but that illness is still presenting, that they still do develop infection. And again, we know it's likely more mild and less severe because they're vaccinated. But yes, we saw with Omicron in particular that breakthrough disease increase in that population. We even had instances where people had recently been vaccinated, did have Delta, and then also were able to get Omicron. So again, with these strains, vaccination is very important because we don't know if those vaccinated people did not have a vaccine on board, how sick they could have been. So I know people like to argue, well, I'll get sick anyway, but we don't know how sick you may get. And so that's why vaccine is so important.
If you haven't been diagnosed, but you think you may be infected with COVID-19, what's the best course of action at that point?
Again, we can't stress this enough. If you're sick in general, staying home is the best thing to do. We do have influenza, although at low levels, circulating in the area as well. And so if you think you're sick, again, we would recommend seeking testing and then staying home. There are the public health guidance out there to isolate at home until your symptoms are resolved. Most people, that is longer than 5 days. And so the guideline was not changed to just 5 days. Basically, after 5 days, you need to have all your symptoms resolved. And most individuals, that's longer than 5 days. But most people can come out of isolation after 10 days at home when they're sick, meaning that they likely don't have, we're pretty confident they don't have viable live virus that they can infect someone else at that point.
Emily, for the vaccinated or even partially vaccinated, if vaccine makers are already working on Omicron-specific boosters, should they just wait to get one of those doses instead of getting a booster shot now?
Well, we recommend getting vaccines as soon as you're able to. And the reason is again, we don't know what's going to happen in the community. So again, how quickly we saw Omicron come in and really spike and take over our community. And while we're thankful it's decreasing, there may be other variants that don't. So what we do know, and the research is showing and is well proven here, is that vaccines are safe and they're also very effective at preventing hospitalization, severe illness, and death. And so we know that even the vaccines that we initially had, Omicron wasn't even on the scene, it hadn't even mutated or been detected yet, and yet we found it is still effective and at preventing severe illness and hospitalization. So I think that's the message that, you know, with the variants rapidly changing, I would not delay a booster just to try to get the most up to date. And again, if someone's really wanting to continually to get boosters, then, you know, CDC and others will put out guidance on how soon they can get that following previous doses.
Another one of the unfortunate byproducts of COVID was people delaying having medical procedures done due to the fear of contracting COVID-19. Is this still a major issue, and how should patients deal with it accordingly?
I think we've seen this let up. Obviously, initially, hospitals, while we had them extremely, we've been extremely safe with our PPE or masking and other protective equipment that we wear. You're right. Initially, you know, there was some delay in cares. The state also put some sanctions in place to kind of regulate that for a small period of time. But no, the hospital is extremely safe. Our staff are always masking. Masking's very effective. We obviously have policies and procedures so that healthcare workers wouldn't be working sick or with COVID. And so we don't want people to delay healthcare procedures, because what we did find a couple years ago that you're alluding to is that when you delay that, the outcomes could potentially be more severe based on delaying a particular procedure or care that could, you know, prevent severe complications or either progression of disease. So our message is we're here, we're very safe. COVID patients are not, you know, they have special designated areas that are completely safe and away from other general public areas. And so, again, please talk to your physician about getting those things scheduled.
How do yourself and the staff at UPMC Hammett address vaccine hesitancy amongst patients?
Yeah, you know, I mean, being 90,000 plus employees across UPMC, we obviously have a wide range of questions and concerns that have come up. I think we've done a really good job over the past year really addressing the concerns, whether it's around pregnancy or even fertility or people concerned about how the mRNA vaccines work and interact with the body. So I think we have a pretty comprehensive set of resources for our staff to be able to look at those and feel comfortable about receiving the vaccine. Obviously, with the federal mandates, we're in compliance with those, making sure that our staff are following those protocols as well. Because, you know, coming to work, again, we have PPE and safe, but we want to protect our healthcare staff as well as protect our patients.
Emily, every time we have you on the program, you're able to share a plethora of information. We really appreciate it. As we steer towards the end of this episode of Business Spotlight, are there any parting words regarding COVID-19 that you would like to share that maybe we didn't get an opportunity to touch base on?
No, I mean, I really think we covered everything. Again, as you mentioned, I think it's here to stay. I think it's cyclical. I think right now we are thankfully on a downward trend, and we hope that we continue through the spring and summer at lower levels like we have the past 2 years. But again, if you're sick, stay home, get tested. You know, that kind of helps all of us in terms of not exposing anyone high risk. Explore vaccination with your healthcare provider. And although we all have mask fatigue, you know, when you're in those high risk areas or around others outside of your home, masking is a very effective way to help stop and slow the spread of this virus. So we would recommend to continue doing those basic things, and keeping yourself and your family safe.
We had an opportunity in the last episode to talk to David Gibbons about this topic, and we want to get your thoughts, Emily, as we wrap up the program. I don't think enough can be said about what your staff and your colleagues at UPMC Hammett have dealt with and the way that they've persevered through the last 2 years. So, can you give us some of your parting thoughts on that topic?
All I can say is, I've been honored and to be able to talk a lot in the public about COVID, but I'm really proud to work here. And I think it's because the caliber of the staff, and again, even in stressful times and situations, but our leadership and all the way down to the person that brings the tray and cleans the hospital, just such dedication. And again, we're a family. So I'm just proud to work here and know that we'll be here to provide care for the community.
And quickly, in closing, Emily, point us in the right direction of where to go for the best resources if you have questions about vaccines, COVID-19, and other health-related issues.
Any one of our UPMC providers, we would ask that you just reach out to them. We also have a lot of information on upmc.com. So please be encouraged to seek answers. We've heard all sorts of questions and we're happy to help.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again next week as Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, is in the Business Spotlight.